If you're having surgery, you most likely will have some type of anesthesia to keep you pain-free during the procedure. While anesthesia is quite safe, we still have a whole lot to learn about what is happening in the brain. And we're going to talk about it on this hour of the morning show. The word anesthesia means without feeling. Kate Cole Adams is a writer and a journalist in Melbourne, Australia, and her new book is Anesthesia, The Gift of Oblivion and the Mystery of Consciousness. And Kate, we're trying to get connected with you. Can you hear us?
Yes, I don't know what happened then.
All right, very good. Well, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Well, you've been studying anesthesia for quite a long time, starting with your journalistic background when your colleagues would pass by your desk and call it your anesthesia thing, your pet project. How did you get into this particular area of interest?
Well, look, entirely surprisingly to myself, it has to be said, my background's not in science or medicine. I was an arts graduate. I failed maths. But I think there are a couple of things. One, I had a very bad back for a long time, and I was dimly aware that I may need surgery one day for it. So I think that was in the background. But more specifically, in 1999, I met a woman at I was at a dinner party outside Sydney, and halfway somewhere between the main course and dessert, one of the women started telling the rest of us about the birth of her daughter, and it was one of those stories that really stopped the party. She'd had the experience of actually going under a general anaesthetic for a cesarean birth, and then waking up at the moment of incision, pretty much. She could feel everything, but she couldn't move. So it was one of those.
And this was an emergency C-section.
This was an emergency C-section.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot going on. They're trying to get her under very quickly because suffering from preeclampsia, which can get very dangerous very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was back in the early 90s. So, you know, it was a fair while ago now. But you can imagine the sort of anxiety in the room. But, you know, occasionally things go very wrong. And in her case, things went very wrong. And so I know that these stories, you know, there's been more publicity, there's more awareness that this can happen now, even if it's only rare. But back then I had never heard of it. So I was sort of horribly fascinated by her story.
How did Rachel's story go horribly wrong? What happened?
Well, essentially, you know, I think what she realized later had happened was that the anesthetic, there had been a failure in the delivery of the anesthetic. So she had got one part of the anesthetic, which is, I should actually say, in modern anesthetics, there are basically three parts. There's what's called the hypnotic, which basically makes you unconscious, which is what we think of as the anesthetic. But there's also, strong painkillers. And often, and particularly in major surgery, there's also something called a muscle relaxant, which is basically a drug that completely paralyzes you. And so what had happened with her was that she had got the paralyzing drug, but for whatever reason, the other two hadn't come on board. So she woke up, and I think one of the things that fascinated me about Rachel was that she's an extraordinary woman, and the way she has kind of dealt with and conceptualized what happened to her is quite remarkable, but also the way she told this story. And she said that the first thing she was aware of was this sort of terrible pain, but she was very bewildered. She had no idea what was happening. She thought she'd been in a car accident and that there was a car sort of, you know, driving backwards and forwards over her. So it took her quite a while to actually work out what was happening, and then she realized that she could hear voices, and then she realized that they were talking about a baby, and she realized that it was her child. It was very intense. I think one of the things that really, really fascinated me in Rachel's story was not only that could have happened, but also that somewhere in the middle of all of that, she had a very distinct and intense kind of out of body or near death experience. And you know, and when she related that, it also made me think a lot about consciousness. And so, in a sense, here was someone who was meant to be unconscious, in fact, ending up having this experience of an utterly altered sort of consciousness, where she found herself in what she described as an enormous room, like a library. And she had this sense in that space that she was somewhere where everything, this is what she said to me, that she felt that everything had ever been known to humans and ever would be known was in that room. And she felt that she shouldn't have been there, and that it was way too much for her, but that she was there and she was sort of safe while she was there. So a big story.
Talking right now with Kate Cole Adams. Her new book is Anesthesia, The Gift of Oblivion and the Mystery of Consciousness. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you ever gone under a general anesthetic? Describe your experience. Do you remember anything? What was the aftermath like for you? And have you ever woke up while being under anesthesia? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can share your experiences at ideas@wpr.org by email. Kate, can you describe for us the role of the anesthesiologist in that operating suite?
I think one of the extraordinary things about anesthesiologists is, in fact, in an operating suite, it's the anesthesiologist whose job is essentially to keep us alive. Our surgeon operates, but the anesthesiologist, their job is to basically, you know, give us these very, very potent drugs, which essentially, and the way I've described it in the book, is that they take us part of the way towards death, and then they bring us back again. They take us deeply enough into unconsciousness that someone else can actually open our body up and perform acts in there that may well be life-saving and certainly may well be life-enhancing, but that would not have been possible 170 years ago. So, you know, they've got quite a remarkable and to me a sort of remarkably they're a very unsung profession, I think, in many ways, because they do an amazing job.
They also are faced with this dilemma that you write about, that they're trying to make the patient very relaxed in a very stressful environment, and that if they don't get that patient relaxed, the chemicals in their body may interact with the chemicals they're trying to give them to make them go into this sleep and to get them at that right level so that the surgery can be done.
Yeah. I mean, an anesthesiologist's job is all about balance. And, you know, the reality is you want, you know, I mean, I'm, as I say, I'm not an anesthesiologist, but you want your patient to be relaxed when they go in for exactly those reasons. The stress hormones can actually, you know, an anxious patient will take more drugs to actually go under. Individual psychology is hugely makes a huge difference in terms of how we relate to and react to our anesthetics. So, you know, an anesthetist is trying to sort of balance. I guess the sort of needs to give us information at the same time as not scaring us too much.
Right, and so it puts them in a bit of a psychological moral quandary, if you will. How much do you tell the patient when they are this anxious? Do you tell them that they have a high risk of death, or could that complicate what they're trying to do?
Yeah, most people going into surgery don't have a high risk of death, and, you know, normally and presumably that would be a conversation that the surgeon or someone else had already had with them. But it is difficult because, and you know, I have to say, one of the things, you know, after about 15 years with this subject, I am very convinced that there is actually information that it is really, really useful and helpful for us to know before we go under an anaesthetic. But I do understand that from the anaesthetist's point of view, and often, sorry, in Australia we say anaesthetist rather than anaesthesiologist, so I might slip sometimes. But part of the difficulty is that often your anaesthesiologist doesn't meet you until just before your procedure, which makes it difficult to actually form those bonds.
There is no trust there. When a patient is given anesthesia for surgery, they're usually told that they will be going to sleep. What happens next, perhaps counting backwards, it's all quite complex, what's going on in the brain, how a person remembers this moment. The new book is Anesthesia, The Gift of Oblivion and the Mystery of Consciousness. Kate Cole Adams stays with us. You can join with your questions, your story about going under. 800-642-1234. We'll be back after a news update. General anesthesia uses a combination of drugs that cause a patient to go unconscious. It's supposed to prevent you from moving and block any memories of the surgery, of course, block the pain. Anesthesia has been around for more than 170 years, but there are still many questions about how it works. We're exploring the questions, exploring your stories this hour of the morning show. Kate Cole Adams stays with us. Her book is Anesthesia, The Gift of Oblivion and the Mystery of Consciousness. You can join in at 800-642-1234. When you had general anesthesia, what was that like for you? If you're an anesthesiologist, what insights can you give us from us outside looking into your profession? What continues to amaze you about anesthesia? Call in 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's start with Christine in Glendale. Good morning, Christine.
Hi, good morning.
Go ahead.
I had an experience when I was 5 years old. I was having surgery to have my tonsils removed. And in the midst of the surgery, I woke up on the table. And, of course, I started crying because I didn't know where I was. And there was actually another patient next to me, a man, and he told me to stop being a baby. And then I went back under. But I remember it like it was yesterday. This was 47 years ago.
Christine, thank you so much for that call. Kate Cole Adams, the memory stays with her.
Christine, thank you for that story. It is extraordinary how intense and long lasting some of these memories can be. And that was from quite a long time back. And I would say that the drugs have improved a great deal since then. But can I ask you that memory, when you say you remember it with such clarity, is it a frightening memory or is it just a memory?
It was frightening to me.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
First of all, I didn't know that I was having surgery. It was at a military base in Frankfurt, Germany. And so my parents didn't tell me I was having surgery. They just said that I'm going to go and meet my sister. And I said, oh, I have a sister. I was all excited. And then they were taking me to meet my sister. Well, it was a nurse. Mm. And like I said, I was put under, and I woke up, and I know there was cotton balls with blood all around me and the taste of blood. And when I woke up, I just started crying. And like I said, it's very vivid to me, like it was yesterday.
It's very interesting hearing your story, Christine, apart from quite distressing. But I think one of the things that these days – there was a big research project out of the UK a few years ago, and one of the main findings they had about anaesthesia awareness, one of the main things they came up with was the huge importance of communication, the huge importance of anaesthetists communicating to their patients before and afterwards. I would also argue that there are arguments for communicating with patients while they're under their anaesthetic partly in case that sort of thing happens to them too, because I think one of the problems with waking is that people are often like you very bewildered. They don't know what's happening. Sometimes they can't move. If you're paralyzed, you can't move. And even if you're not feeling any pain, and Christine, I'm not sure if you were or not, but that experience can be terrifying. And people think all sorts, you know, people think that they've died or that they've been paralyzed or that they're having this kind of weird, scary dream. And often that actually adds to, I mean, that can often link to PTSD and other problems going forward. So, which is one of the reasons I think it's really important to talk about these issues. And the only other thing I would say really briefly is from the number of times I've been on radio since this book coming out, every time I do, you know, people ring in, and a lot of people have been carrying around stories like this one for many, many years, decades. And often there were stories that weren't listened to back then, and people's stories were either denied or disbelieved. And in a sense, it became a double trauma because you had the experience and then you had the denial of the experience by the medical establishment, in your case, by your parents. It's complicated and difficult.
Christine, thank you so much for the call. Yes, let's go to Teresa now in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, I just wanted to call in and mention that it's just not anesthesiologists that are administering these type of drugs to their patients. I'm currently in school to be a paramedic, and if we need to take over breathing for a patient, we will actually paralyze them, sedate them, and administer pain relief in order to intubate and breathe for the patient.
Very good point, Teresa. Thank you so much. And what is that experience like for you? You're in training right now, I understand. Have you gone through this type of a procedure?
Actually, dropping a tube in the field is pretty rare, but we practice it at every chance we get. We're told that if we're in our lab or anything, if there's a free mannequin with a T-tube, you practice dropping that tube, just because when the time comes, you want to have that muscle memory in order for you to be able to do that. And you need to have your protocols down for how to, if it's a trauma, for how to take out that patient very quickly in order to take over their breathing. We have two or three different protocols for that. Most departments do, in order to, if there's a trauma, there's a 3-2-1 protocol that we use to take out a patient in order to take over the breathing. And then there's another protocol called DFAM or RSI, which is a rapid.
Oh, and we just broke up with Teresa, and it's getting more difficult to hear you. Kate Cole Adams, she talked about a 3-2-1 protocol there. What do you make of that?
To be honest, I'm not familiar with this. I think the system is a bit different in Australia. Generally, the only people who can administer anaesthesia are actually anaesthesiologists. And I'm not quite sure what the situation would be with paramedics. So, and also, that did start to break up a little bit, so I didn't quite follow the 3-2 protocol, sorry.
It's really interesting, Kate, that you make this observation that the medical team, even once a person is under and the anesthesia is administered, that they are not treating that person as an object there on the table, but as still a person, and that with feelings, and a person who is there with them. Is there something to that?
Look, it's again one of the things that I came through feeling very strongly by the end of my research. And I think this is one of the anesthesiologist's dilemmas in a sense. And you know, an American anesthesiologist said to me once, you know, in order to actually do what we have to do to a patient, we need to turn that patient into an object. However, I understand what he was saying, but I think it's that is problematic on various levels. And, you know, one level is that, in fact, there have been studies that show that even when people are anaesthetized, we can learn information, we can take in information when we are unconscious. Now, you know, they're not all the studies concur, but overall, there has been there has been plenty of evidence that people can learn words and things under anesthesia. I also feel very strongly, and also sometimes people do wake for short periods. And again, you want to know that there is someone with you. And my feeling is the surgeon's job is to do the operation. The anesthesiologist is in a sense is the advocate for that patient. And I think that it is their job to try and keep that patient whole, because what happens when we go under anaesthetic is it's an experience of such intense vulnerability. And in a sense, you know, we are dismantled. As a human being, we are dismantled. What happens in our brain is a sort of dismantling process. And we need someone to hold us together in a sort of metaphoric way. But also, the other thing I was going to say, I also think it is simply polite to treat your patient as if they are a full human, and to talk to them, to talk as if they are awake, because they are your client. And I think it's very easy, and I understand the need for camaraderie and sort of small talk in operations, but I think that there is a tendency sometimes to forget the person who's actually central to the whole procedure.
Let's go to Tom now, who joins us from Cedarburg. Hi, Tom.
Morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had an operation on my low back a few years ago, and I woke up in the recovery room in extreme pain at that site. And they had me laying on my back, and I would lift my back off the table so I wouldn't be touching my back down on the incision. And I asked the nurse, why I was in such pain, and she said, well, you shouldn't be in pain because you're getting the medicine through your hand. And this went on for about 15 minutes. I'd hold myself off the bed as long as I could, and I would go down again and be in just unbelievable pain. And then I finally saw the anesthesiologist, and I asked him, I yelled at him, I said, please come and check this. And here the cord, the plastic tube with the medicine had a kink in it, so I had no medicine at that point in me. And then he straightened it out, and then within a minute or so, I got some relief. But that was one of the most painful experiences of my life.
And look, that's so interesting, because sometimes that can also happen while people are actually under the anaesthetic, and clearly you don't want to be going through that without a lot of pain medication on board.
Tom, thank you so much for your story. Anne in Madison, go ahead. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I went into, it was elective surgery. I was healthy, and I was having elective surgery done, and it was the first time I had ever been put under general anaesthetic, and I was scared about it, but I thought, somebody will talk to me before I go in, and I'll be able to ask questions and things. And either I missed it or nobody did. And when I got into the operating room, they said, how are you? And I said, I'm really, really scared. Again, nobody talked to me, and they put me under. And then when the operation was over, I had a real hard time coming out of the anesthetic, and I felt like I was drowning, and like I would come up to the surface and get a breath and go back down again. And it took several hours for that feeling to go away. And then I was fine. And then a couple of weeks later, I went into a depression that they said was caused by the anesthetic, that maybe not quite a couple of weeks, and that necessitated medication and therapy. And so it was, it was a pretty hard thing to go through.
Anne, thanks for that timeline and what you went through there and telling us. Kate, is that common?
I have to say, I don't know. I do hear stories like this sometimes. I think it's very difficult. One of the problems with this area is most patients, there's not a, people don't get asked after anesthetics often all the time how they went. I think that Anne's story there is very interesting. So just sort of talking about, and I don't know how long ago this happened. I suspect it was a while, but you know, that kind of lack of communication and caring and sort of you know, that sort of creating a safe place before Anne went in, and you know what we were talking about earlier with the stress of that. And I have no idea whether that would have had any made any difference to how you emerged from that surgery or with the depression afterwards. But I think it's interesting that they all happened. You know, and I suppose one of the things for me in investigating this whole area is one of the things that surprised me is, although anesthesiologists are very good at doing what they do, it is astonishing how much we don't know. Not only about precisely how the anaesthetics work or precisely what they do, but what the human experience is of going under an anaesthetic and coming out the other end. So, yeah, thank you for that story.
Yes, Anne, thank you. And Barbara in Madison would like to talk about nurse anaesthetists. It's a hard word to say, nurse anaesthetists. Barbara, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. Yes, it's a hard word to say.
But we try. We do our best.
It's a terminology issue. In the United States, over half of the anesthetics are provided by nurse anesthetists.
Oh, you're good.
It is just as safe as that given by an anesthesiologist. Often we work together as a team, but particularly in rural areas, sometimes it's only a nurse anesthetist providing the anesthesia. And may I interrupt to say that while I was waiting to come on air, I heard the talk of the anesthesiologist who said they turned them into a robot or whatever and dehumanized them. And I was horrified to hear that. I never considered my patients anything but a person I was giving care to.
Yeah, that's really lovely to hear. And I think that is true of a lot of practitioners. It's interesting, and you know, as we said before, the system's a bit different in Australia, but so we don't have the nurse anaesthetist category, but there are a lot of anaesthetic nurses. And I have to say, whenever I talk, and sometimes I talk to groups of anaesthetists these days, or anaesthesiologists these days as well, but the anaesthetic nurses often come up afterwards and they say very similar things, and they say, you know, we always make sure we hold the hand, a patient's hand as they go under. You know, we keep talking and reassuring, and you know, I do hear those stories often, and I find those stories very reassuring. And I've spoken to patients who went under. One woman told me a story about as she was going under, she began to shake violently, and she was very scared, but I think she was also very cold. And she said she was standing there lying there in the operating theatre, and basically everyone seemed to be kind of ignoring her until this nurse realised what was going on and basically leant over and held her, you know, and held her to her own body to warm her up. And she said it was so comforting and so reassuring, and that she then went under that anaesthetic feeling like a safe child.
Author Kate Cole Adams points out in her book that surgery is a scary thing. Everyone is scared before an operation, even something that is quite routine. The book is Anesthesia. She's talked to anesthesiologists all over and is with us. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you been more afraid of going under than an actual surgical experience? What was your experience? Call in, tweet us at WPR Mornings, back after the news. We're learning about the realm beyond consciousness. What happens when you are given general anesthesia? On this hour of the morning show, Kate Cole Adams is the author, and she stays with us. She's a writer and journalist based in Melbourne, Australia. Her book is Anesthesia. She writes, like death, you go there alone, and like birth, you emerge seemingly empty-handed. What happens in between might at the time feel like nothing, or it might feel like something. Let's explore through your perspective at 800-642-1234. Have you watched a loved one receive general anesthesia? What was that experience like? How did your loved one come to? Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Kate, let's dig into the history now of anesthesia. It's been around for a very long time, dating back to the 1800s. What has its course been like through time, through history?
I think the thing that fascinated me about anesthesia is that really, anesthesia was formally first publicly and formally demonstrated as in general anesthesia, the sort that makes you unconscious, in 1846. So, yeah, it's been around more than 170 years now. But when you think about the rest of human history, it's very, very recent. And, I mean, it's been quite extraordinary because prior to that there was some surgery, but basically there were operating theatres in various hospitals, but most of them had very little traffic because most people did not want to be operated on. There are some, you know, if you look in the history books, there are some terrifying stories of, you know, patients being tied down, patients being gagged, patients being, you know, patients sometimes climbing off the operating table halfway through the operation trying to escape from the room. Anesthesia really was a fairly desperate last recourse for many, many people. You know, and I suppose over history there have been various pockets, there have been various people, you know, in China, in Japan, in England, people had over time put together forms of anesthesia, but no one had ever actually demonstrated it in a kind of publicly accessible way. And, you know, in 1846, when this first public demonstration was done in Boston, at that point, probably the most effective form of anesthesia and one of the most widely used was hypnosis.
When did they know that this would transform medicine?
Look, I would say almost immediately. As soon as the demonstration, which happened in what's now known at Massachusetts General Hospital, there'd been a previous attempt to demonstrate, maybe a year before, which had failed. But when this guy, William Morton, basically almost immediately, the papers were full of the story the next day. You know, he anaesthetized this young guy who needed a tumor on his jaw dealt with. At the end of that surgery, the surgeon looked around and said, "Gentlemen, this is no humbug." It had spread to the UK and France by the next year. It was all over the world very quickly because after it was effectively out of the box, no one wanted to have operation, no one wanted surgery without it. And so, it took a bit longer in some areas, in particular, you know, childbirth, because for some reason women were sort of expected, the pain was expected to be, you know, beneficial. So, but I think Queen Victoria put paid to that because she insisted on having anaesthetic for the birth of one of her children after it had been, invented as such.
Right, because it's very common now for women to have a block when they deliver. Do you think anesthesia is it becoming more, and I don't want to use the word acceptable, but because it is so common now, do people have different feelings about it? Is it not so scary?
To be honest, I think people take it for granted. And I really think that people tend not to think about it at all. And I think one of the reasons for that is that actually, secretly, it is a bit scary and people don't want to think about it. But another reason is, it's a very weird process because, the thing that anesthesia does is takes away our consciousness, it takes away our memory. Often we don't even remember our anesthetist talking or an anesthesiologist talking to us beforehand. I feel as if it's almost it's a bit of a blank in the kind of cultural psyche as well as in the individual experience. one of the things when I started researching this book and talking about this book, I couldn't really believe that no one had actually written a sort of, you know, a sort of an accessible, popular type of exploration of anesthesia outside the medical field, really. You know, well, nothing that I discovered. And, yeah, it still perplexes me.
Let's go to John in Oak Creek. Hi, John.
Hello there. Yeah, I had a couple comments on this. I actually worked in processing in the OR and didn't really know much about surgery, but I know you were talking about how people are a little apprehensive about surgery, and I understand that. But after being in the OR and watching those teams work, I have to admit the confidence that they exude, the way they work with the teamwork, I personally have no problem going under the knife. The second thing that I would have to tell you, when you were saying about how people come out from under the anesthesia or how they go under, I did have surgery, and when I came out, they said, you know, you're a strange guy, and I said, why is that? And he says, well, the whole time you were under, you were talking. So I'd love to hear what your guest thinks about that. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. I have heard quite a... I mean, there are a lot of amusing stories about anesthetics and anesthesia, and you know, one of the things I think about the drugs is as you're going under and as you're coming out, they can be quite disinhibiting. So, you know, patients going under make all sorts, you know, say all sorts of things to their anaesthetists. And I think, you know, and generally the anaesthetists, if, you know, if they're polite, just leave it in the operating theatre. But there's some funny stuff that goes on. I was talking to a woman the other day who told me a story about she had actually woken up during an anaesthetic, but you know she wasn't particularly disturbed by it. She wasn't in any pain, but what she really remembered clearly was that while she was awake and the surgical team wasn't aware, but there was a sort of minor drama because the surgeon, who was a woman, who for whatever reason had been wearing pearls, and her string of pearls broke. And there was a bit of a kerfuffle as they picked them up off the floor or whatever. And so the woman who was talking to me went back to sleep. But the next day when the surgeon came around, you know, on her rounds and asked her how she was feeling, and this woman said, well, you know, I'm fine, but I hope you didn't leave any of those pearls inside me. And she said the surgeon nearly fell over.
Let's go to Saeed now in Green Bay. Saeed, good morning.
Yes, good morning for taking my call. Full disclosure, I'm an anesthesiologist, and I just wanted to congratulate your speaker. I have rarely heard a layperson speak with such knowledge and accuracy about our specialty, so I appreciate that. Oftentimes when there are programs about anesthesia or there are popular films, that go in the public domain, I actually add time to my schedule to spend extra time with my patients dispelling the myths that were propagated. People get very anxious and come with additional questions. I'm very glad that your program has not done that. But I also want to go back to the experience of awareness under anesthesia that we were talking about earlier. And it is obviously horrifying when that happens. It is extremely, extremely rare, and I just wanted to make that point that oftentimes when patients say that they had recall during a procedure, the intention of the anesthetic was not to give them unconsciousness. So usually a regional anesthetic technique was used where the patient, let's say, had a spinal epidural or maybe a nerve block of some sort that renders the operative site completely insensible to pain. And the patient then is given sedation for anxiety relief, the objective of which is not to completely render the patient unconscious. And so for parts of the procedure, the patient has no recall, but then they remember something, and if communication with the patient wasn't wasn't robust and that objective wasn't shared, the patient entered the arrangement maybe with the expectation that they would be unconscious during the entire time. And so when they regain consciousness for a brief period of time, they think something is wrong about that.
Thank you so much. Well, thank you so much for your earlier comments. But also, I think what the point that you've just made is really intriguing. And I suppose one of the things that fascinated me was, there was some research not that long ago, a few years, and I think there's been a couple of studies, but one involving an American anesthesiologist, George Mashour. And that research showed that basically for the people who had actually been in exactly the situation you describe, who sort of, woke not really from anesthesia but from a sedative, in fact, the amount of anxiety and the sort of level of our post-operative, well, sometimes PTSD but or other sort of emotional difficulty was almost identical whether or not they'd been under full anesthesia or sedative anesthesia. And so, again, I think it comes back to that conversation about clear communication with patients about what to expect, because, it doesn't, from the patient's perspective, it doesn't really matter which it is. If you're, it's the fear that becomes a lot of the problem.
Kate, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Kate Cole Adams, she's a journalist, novelist. She recently wrote the nonfiction book titled Anesthesia, The Gift of Oblivion and the Mystery of Consciousness. This hour of the morning show is produced by Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.